Welcome to this 211th edition of Europe Calling. I would especially like to welcome our guests in Georgia today, whom you can already see here and whom I'll introduce in more detail in a second. My name is Maximilian Fries. I'm the managing director of Europe Calling and I am your host this evening. Before we get started, a few housekeeping announcements. We're going to be speaking German and English today. And to make sure everyone understands everything, we have two interpreters assisting us. You can find the interpreting functionality by clicking the small globe in the control bar or by clicking more, and then you can simply select the language you want to listen to.
In English, so everyone knows what I'm talking about. So welcome to this 111th Europe Calling webinar. Today we will speak German and English. If you need English interpretation, please check out the globe in the control panel and choose English. And if you're on a mobile device, it's actually under more. Wieder zurück zu Deutsch. Wie immer, bei Europe Calling könnt ihr eure Fragen
stellen. As always, with Europe Calling, you can ask your questions and rate the questions of others. Today we are using Slido for this, and you will see the link for it in the chat. Now feel free to ask your questions there and rate the questions of others. We have over 1,000 registrations. Many of them will be joining us, even though it's 6 p.m. on a Saturday, so we have lots of interest, which is why we need your votes in order to find the most popular questions. And please add your names so I don't always have to say anonymous user. And as always, Europe Calling will be recorded and then put online on YouTube and as a podcast. Please bear this in mind when asking questions. Now that's it for the housekeeping rules. We're going to get going. We're now going live to Georgia, where people have been taken to the streets for 16 days to demonstrate against the ruling party and for a future in Europe. And we said, okay, as Europe Calling, we have to get involved. Also to ensure that this gets attention in Western Europe. And today is also a special day, because exactly 1 year ago today, Georgia was granted EU candidate status. That's why we're organizing this webinar. We will now hear from our two guests for about 10 minutes each, and then we will have time for your questions. And then at 7 p.m. we will finish. And I would like to start with our first guest, Theona Makarashvili, democracy activist in Georgia and co-founder of Caucasus Open Space. This is an NGO working for democracy, rule of law, and sustainability in the region. And Theona is also the director of Maisi News, a platform for investigative journalism. Dear Theona, we are delighted that you are here this evening at Europe Calling, and you have the floor.
Thank you, Maximilian. Is my voice audible? I think so, right?
Perfect. Yes.
Let me start by saying thank you to everyone who registered and expressed their interest on a Saturday evening to be with us and to listen to what we have to say. And thank you to Maximilian and all the organizers for this wonderful opportunity to make our voices heard. Also, again, it would be important, I think, for us to share our thank you for all the numerous actions of support that we see from your side in Georgia. And one of the latest ones, the adoption of the resolution that's named, I believe, European Future for Georgia. It was adopted in October with the motion of the Alliance 90, the Greens, the FDP, and the SPDs. So that also mentions the sanctions and the challenges that the democracy in Georgia has. So definitely a huge thanks for that. We have 10 minutes, and I would like to be able to cover some of the essential, the most important aspects of what's going on in Georgia today. And I'd be happy later on to answer any of the questions that you have. But let me start by what's happening today in the streets of Tbilisi and in the streets of Georgia. We have protest, which is concentrated in Tbilisi, but also over 30 cities throughout Georgia. So the protest is absolutely unique in a way that this is not just the people, not just the citizens standing in the streets peacefully protesting. Firstly, the violations that happened during the election day and the fraud, the massive fraud that happens on elections, but most predominantly protesting the November 28th decision of the ruling party Georgian Dream that has decided to make a public statement saying that they suspend negotiations on European integration until 2028, which I think everyone in Georgia understands that there's no such thing as suspending the negotiations. It basically means the termination of that. And that resulted in hundreds of thousands of people peacefully coming out to the streets to protest this. And everyone who follows Georgia and the Georgian society knows that for over a decade, public opinion polling has been showing the overwhelming support of the absolute majority of Georgians for the Euro-Atlantic integration. The average number of supporters has been 80%. For almost a decade. The number may fluctuate a little bit from year to year, but it's very stable that absolute majority of Georgians are supporting the idea of Euro-Atlantic integration of Georgia. And I would like to start off by saying that the European integration for Georgia is something of a very fundamental aspirations. It's very fundamental for Georgians on a very basic level, because Europe for Georgians has been equated and to rule of law, to the fundamental human rights, to the democracy, to freedom and to fairness and to the equality. And I would like to remember the words of one of the protesters who took the microphone back in summer, when the law against the civil society, we popularly in Georgia, we call it Russian law, because for the first time, this law that's violating basically the freedom of expression and the freedom of operation of the civil society, it was first introduced in 2012. And by the time European Court of Human Rights has said in their decision, in their final decision, that this law is undemocratic and it violates numerous articles in human rights under the European Convention of Human Rights, by that time, over a decade, a majority of the free society, free media, election observers and NGOs in Russia had been wiped out by that time. So this is the very same law that was adopted in Georgia in summer. And the night before it was finally adopted, when the president has vetoed the decision to adopt this law, the next day we were waiting for the parliament to overcome the veto. So the night before, when the law has finally entered the force, there was unprecedented number of peaceful protesters in the streets. Some of the drones that were taking the film from the air have approximated that there were approximately 300,000 peaceful protesters in Tbilisi on that day, which is extraordinary for a country of about 3.5 million. It's an unprecedented number, and many more have supported the Euro-Atlantic integration and protested those undemocratic laws from their homes as well, without being able for some of them to join the protest. And I think this is something of an extraordinary aspiration for the citizens of this country, because the pressure on the government has been so high to continue steady progress in the democratic development and steady progress in European Euro-Atlantic integration. The pressure was so high from the citizens that in 2017, the government was literally forced to adopt the Article 78 of the Constitution in Georgia, according to which, and I quote, it says that the government institutions have to do everything in their power for Euro-Atlantic integration of Georgia. This is in our constitution. And the preamble of the Georgian constitution says that our current contemporary constitution is based on the legacy of the first constitution of Georgia, which was adopted over 100 years ago in 1921, which I think that all of the citizens of this country are feel that this is their legal heritage, something that expresses our values and the way we want to govern our society. Because the constitution, the first constitution of Georgia that was adopted in 1921, over 100 years ago. It was one of the first constitutions in the world that provide as much detail as it did when it comes to describing the level of freedom, equality, fairness for all of the citizens, whether it's male or female, whether it's representatives of different social, political groups, whether it's for different ethnicities or for people from the different religions. So it's an extraordinary piece of legacy, basically, the constitutional heritage that we have, which current constitution says that we have to base our development of our governance based on that legacy of that constitution. So today, basically, hundreds of thousands of people are protesting in the streets. The protests have started on November 28th. So this is day 17, I think, of the massive uninterrupted protests. And something extraordinary is happening in Georgia, both in a bad way and in a good way. What's happening, the extraordinary aspect in a good way, I would say, is that definitely hundreds of thousands of citizens have been protesting every day peacefully within the constitutional framework. But it hasn't been just the citizens. It has been thousands and thousands of public servants. From what we were able to trace publicly, approximately 3,500 public servants from different ministries have signed the open letters, open statements condemning on the one side the violence against peaceful protesters, and on another side condemning the government's decision to halt the European integration process of Georgia. So this is extraordinary because if someone follows what's happening in Georgia, the economic violence against public servants has been extraordinary. There was massive intimidation and pressure in the pre-election period. And the situation in Georgia, considering that we don't have any strong social or economic protection systems for any public servant in Georgia who protests anything that the government does, this is related to a substantial risk to their life, to their career, to their economic security and everything else. So this has been an extraordinary act of courage on the side of the public servants themselves, who have for years and years have been serving the democratic development of Georgian institutions and the opportunity, a chance for the European integration of Georgia. But what we see today, again, is that people are being tortured. There is massive violence in the streets. And as a member of the team that provides legal support to people who have been illegally detained in the streets, as a legal team that documents the violence in the streets, I can say that roughly 500 people have been illegally arrested up to this day, starting from November 28th. We can estimate that approximately 300 of those arrested people have been violently brutalized, and even many of the organizations, including our own, have basically the evidences that there has been torture and inhuman degrading treatment. And I would like to recall one of the most recent and the heaviest incidents that our lawyers have witnessed themselves and have heard from the people who suffered this violence themselves. Those were peaceful protesters. There were peaceful journalists who have basically been arrested. And while arrested, they were systemically beaten every 5 minutes. The different groups of the law enforcement would come in and beat them in the head, in the face, until they got unconscious. And to those people who were unconscious after all those beatings, they also threw in some of the gas that is basically quite poisonous and has very heavy complications for one's health. The machine that where they have been detained has been bloody all over when they came in and to look around. And about 100 of those peaceful protesters were denied the emergency hospital services, even though they were in a very difficult medical conditions. So what we're seeing today that's been happening, it's It's a violence of unprecedented scale and intensity in Georgia. But regardless of all the risks that exist in terms of physical safety, in terms of every other aspect that the peaceful demonstrators are subject to, still the numbers do not decrease. The numbers increase day by day, and the protesters are very firmly saying that we want European integration and we will not accept the hijacking of the democratic institutions. All of that had a little bit of a context that I would like to provide, because even though the massive and systemic protest has started on November 28th, as government said that they will suspend the EU integration talks, but before that, we had October 26th elections. And our own organization, Caucasus Open Space, has been a member of the We Vote coalition that unites approximately 30 different election observer organizations. And we have been coordinating with other election observer observers as well. And what we have found is the massive systemic scale of election fraud, which basically substantially affected the election results. So today, basically, the only ones who recognize the election results are basically the Georgian Dream itself, and unfortunately the Constitutional Court, which for years and years we have been saying that judiciary in Georgia is not free, and unfortunately considering the fact how the judges are being appointed or how the system of the responsibility of the judiciary system works, all of that indicates that the judiciary is basically instrumentalized by the ruling party. What happened is that during the elections, our own coalition, we have gathered the evidences of the systemic fraud, violation of the secrecy of vote, the bribery, and the system basically worked in a way that we have witnessed all of the methods of fraud and election violations. Both the simple ones, something that occurred maybe in the 2000s in Georgia, but also more sophisticated ones as well. Some of the most widespread violations have been violation of the secrecy of vote, but also the bribery, but also voting through other the numbers of the IDs of the other citizens, so-called renting of the IDs of the citizens. So we collected, our own coalition, observer coalition, has collected the evidence approximately from 1/5 of the polling stations, not the polling stations, the polling stations that combine approximately 1/5 of the total voters in Georgia. So approximately 417,000 votes were affected by systemic fraud that happened in Georgia. And we have the evidences and the litigation, and that is basically 20% of everyone who has voted. But then again, we didn't cover all of the polling stations, so the 20% that we have found is probably much, much more higher. Other election observers have also, like Isfed and Gaila, they have also observed that from 10 to 20% of polling stations, there were kinds of heavy violations that directly affect the outcome of the election results. The tendency that the elections were basically hijacked and stolen, this is not just something that the local observer organizations have confirmed, but this is also something that was indirectly confirmed by the political prisoners of the Russian regime that have somehow escaped and now live abroad. For example, you probably all know about Roman Udot. He was the chairperson of the election observer organization Golos, and the founder of it, and he was one of the first leaders of one of the first organizations that were affected by the so-called Russian law that was later copied in Georgia as well. And they have the methodology of Kisling-Spielkin method developed by the data analysts and scientists that basically follows any kind of inorganic anomalies in the data that indicates that the elections were, that there was massive fraud in the election. So the Russian data analysts, also the former prisoners of the Russian regime, they have also confirmed that there is high likelihood that there was fraud and that substantially affected the election results in Georgia. And third thing that I would like to mention is also that We have a very difficult situation in Georgia in terms of how the Georgian Dream has prepared for the elections as well. You may all have heard of the hasty election legislation changes that the Russian, the Georgian Dream Party has adopted, which helped them basically to score the election results that they did. We had, for example, the Russian law that we constantly talk about, which substantially increased the violence against the civil society and the media. We had the so-called offshore law, which allowed basically money laundering into Georgia, because it removed all of the fees or the taxes for bringing in the money and the large funds from the offshore zones. We also have the so-called law against LGBTQ propaganda that creates a completely unsafe environment for the LGBTQI activists and their allies. So the situation has been very difficult all over. And right now, after the elections, the Georgian Dream Party has also initiated the law, which makes it extremely easy for the Georgian Dream to dismiss any public servant that they feel is not supporting them. The procedures for dismissing public servants have been simplified to absurdity. Yes, basically what we're seeing right now, it's a situation that we have never witnessed basically since the 90s or the 2000s. The situation is historically dramatic for throughout the history of the independent Georgia. All of us basically are expecting that even more of our activists are going to be illegally detained. Police is also sneaking the drugs into the pockets of the detainees. They are just illegally arresting everyone in their homes or while they're walking a dog. There are anonymous calls on the activists and the media. And the situation is difficult all over, basically, with, as I've mentioned, lots of instances of torture and ill treatment of the people. Yes, this I don't keep track of the time, so
I think yes, if you could come to an end, and then we do everything there's left to say, we do in the Q&A. I think it would be great.
Right. What I would like to say towards the end is probably that the civil society in Georgia, all of us have a couple of demands during the peaceful protest that we voice on a daily basis. But some of the things that we ask also of our international partners is definitely the sanctions, but the sanctions have to be strong enough that they are felt. We are also, we're not recognizing the elections that we feel that they are illegitimate based on the couple of factors, the massive fraud, the violence against the peaceful civilians, as well as violation of the Article 78 of the Constitution of Georgia. Because the Georgian Dream decided to halt the euro integration process. So I think I will stop here, but obviously there's a lot to say. I don't want to take more time now, but I'll be happy to answer any of the questions that may come.
Thank you, Tayona. Vielen Dank für deine Arbeit.
Thank you. Also thank you for your work.
Ungefährliche Arbeit aktuell.
Not without its risk. And we are getting lots and lots of questions. So if you do have questions talking to the audience, then put your own into the chat and also vote on the other questions. Then Dr. Sonja Schiffer is our next speaker. She is head of the regional office in the South Caucasus. She's also working for peace promotion and the illiberal influence of Russia in Turkey, Georgia and Bosnia was the topic of her doctorate thesis. Thank you very much for this invitation. And a thank you to Tayona. That was a really good overview. I'm going to try to be a bit shorter and talk about the broader framework and what the options for the Western democratic partners are. Maybe just for the background. I have been the head of the Heinrich Böll Stift Foundation in Georgia for 3 years now. And of course, around our foundation, everybody supports the protests. And it's completely clear that the large majority, if not all the Georgians who support democracy, are not in agreement with this decision to turn their back onto Europe, and they're also not in agreement with the violence and the anti-democratic measures that can be seen on the streets now. But in the last years, in terms of the atmosphere and the mood, things have been deteriorating with our partners, because all of these developments were already looming for the past few years, and now we hear again and again, but you've only just got your candidate status and everything seemed to be going so well. But that's not true, and the civil society in Georgia has been saying the same for years, that that's not the case. And when they received candidate status last year, the reception of that decision was met with mixed feelings. It wasn't really a happy day. And now they have candidate status. They've had it for a year. And people like me and the Georgian civil society have been working for this for a year, but they got the status in this context of this illiberal, more and more illiberal government. And it was clear that they were turning further and further toward Russia. They still got the status because of the very pro-European stand of the civil society in Georgia. And I've seen in the tool that there was a question, I think, why people keep voting for a Georgian Dream despite their anti-European position. And Teona said something about the elections and manipulations, but we can talk about this during the discussion as well, I think. So to start, I wanted to say something about the policies of Georgian Dream, to give you an overview. It's important to note that in 2012, Georgian Dream got to power. So that was a change of power that was supported by a broad majority, and so were their policies at the time. There was a lot of support for that. And in 2008, there was the Russian war against Georgia, and after that, Russia occupied Abkhazia and South Ossetia, those regions, and the economic relationship between Russia and Georgia had broken down completely, because there had been this embargo against Georgia for a while. So many people in Georgia wanted to normalize that relationship with Russia, because they need the gas, and then the party Georgian Dream stood for that, and they were quite open about that even in 2012. But there was support for that at the time. But normalizing the relationship with Russia does not mean that they wanted to oppose their integration in the European Union in Western Europe. That had been the goal for many years for the majority of the population, and they voted for Georgian Dream back then because the government in power at the time had violated human rights more and more, and so they'd lost trust of the populace. So Georgian Dream then stood for, let's say, respecting human dignity. That's what they said. But at the very latest, now, after this very brutal repression of protests by the police, that's no longer what they stand for. So since 2012, when Georgian Dream came to power, we can see that in politics, the economy, and also in the society, the ties to Russia have been strengthened more and more. A lot of that under the radar, because economic integration was also something that was written in the constitution, as Theona said. But it was really just lip service. They said they wanted Euro-Atlantic integration, but only as long as the interests of certain parties were not at risk. And back then, there was no concrete possibility for NATO membership or EU membership. And that all changed with the Russian war against Ukraine, with the invasion. Then, all of a sudden, Georgia finally got this European perspective. And Georgian Dream's reaction showed very clearly, at least that's my take, that this party, Ivanishvili, let's say, didn't want this integration process in the European Union, didn't want the candidate status. And then 2023, they adopted the Russian law, the foreign agents law, then they took it back, and then they got the candidate status, and then this year they finally adopted this foreign agents law, which of course leads to a lot of pressure on civil society in the land, in the country. And then there's the LGBTQI, there's a package on that, which also restricts freedom further. And Georgian Dream, especially a lot of people who are important in the economy, have benefited from a good relationship with Georgian Dream and getting closer to Russia, even and especially since the invasion of Russia in Ukraine. And there have been journalists finding out that, let's say, very expensive cars are still being exported to Russia from the EU via Georgia, even though there are sanctions in place, and other goods as well. So that is a way to evade the sanctions, and the government in Georgia doesn't seem to want to stop this practice. So it has been said, but we cannot say it often enough, it's anti-European, but it's also a very illiberal and anti-democratic cause and authoritarian cause. But that started early in 2017 already, when they wrote Atlantic integration in the constitution. They added that marriage is a union between a man and a woman, so traditional family values should be kept, and the gay rope hack, that was the Russian propaganda, should be something that their population should be protected from. So that was also something propagated by Georgian Dream. And then there was a further radicalization, especially since the Russian war against Ukraine. For instance, in last year and this year, the prime ministers of Georgia, the consecutive ones, joined this the conference in Budapest, which was a right-wing extremist conference, and gave those voices a platform in Hungary. And in 2023, Georgian Dream was excluded from the European Socialist Party, where they were an observer. They never really had a social democratic profile, but at the very beginning of their government, the first mandate in 2012, they had adopted a couple of social democratic measures following Poland's model. So maybe, just briefly, I would like to say something about the protests, the scope of the protests, and how they've been beaten back. Fiona said something about gave some figures as well, but let's say 200,000 people around about have been protesting of the in the last few years. If you look at the same number rationally in Germany, that was calculated, extrapolated to the German population, that would mean 4.5 million people protesting in Germany, or 18 million in the US. And so 400 people or more at this point have been imprisoned, and that would be 9,000 in Germany and much more in the US. So the numbers are quite high for a smaller country, so you have to look at this in perspective. So what's important is also that there are hints that this repression from the police is systematic in nature. So they people are injured systematically when they are detained. That is in itself is, of course, illegitimate. But then after having been detained, when they are in the police cars, they are beaten up, humiliated. There are horrible pictures going around from people with black eyes, broken nose, broken ribs, and without seeing, have been detained for days in jail without seeing a doctor. And then when they're at the release, their ribs are still broken and treated. Maybe one last point on the German and European reaction to this. Fiona said it, that there was a resolution by the German parliament before the election, and there have been several resolutions by the European parliament lately. The last one that came last week to call for sanctions against Georgian Dream, and maybe also to stop visa-free travel for the party, but that for the country, but that would also be a measure against the population, of course. Then no more high-level meetings, but that's already happening in practice. Only Viktor Orban from all the European member states has actually been meeting a European Dream and also congratulated them on their so-called election victory. Then in the last few days, there had been a visit by several MEPs, and I had the opportunity to be there as well. These European Parliament members also joined a demonstration later in the evening. I think that was very important to show their solidarity. And then they wrote a letter to say that these elections should not be recognized. They also called for bilateral sanctions, and they wanted an EU special envoy for the European future of Georgia. And I think such a post would be very helpful at the moment. Then next week, there are going to be ministerial councils and a European Council meeting as well. Decisions will be taken. It's not clear right now which measures will be adopted and if or what sanctions will be adopted. So it's not clear anything could happen. Hungary, especially, but also some other member states are blocking any joint EU measures. So Germany, which is not something that happens a lot, has really been working for even bilateral sanctions or a coalition of the willing to adopt sanctions, joint sanctions against a Georgian Dream, even if Hungary is blocking joint sanctions by the entire EU. So since the election, or since the adoption of the foreign agent law, there have been other measures taken by the EU. For instance, the introduction of EU funds in the defense area, and then bilateral funding for development cooperation. That had been stopped. These two things have been stopped in exchange for more money for the civil society. So the EU the member states are really put to the test here with their reaction. And to come to a close, I would like to speak about three points that I find particularly important. So I think this is really a very good example for the battle between democracy and autocracy. That's a global battle at the moment. And it's a good point to illustrate the values that the EU stands for and that, say, Russia stands for. That's the same battle that we're seeing in Ukraine. Of course, that's a lot more serious. But also in some EU member states with disinformation, with propaganda by right-wing and extremist and populist parties. I'm not sure whether everyone in Germany has really understood what's happening. And I think we should wake up to this reality. We have to. And I also think that this is a good example to illustrate how important it is that the EU is capable of acting. We can't have individual states blocking decisions. I think that we have found a format, the coalition of the willing, etc., to take some decisions on Georgia, and I think that has to be reinforced in the future. And my last point, with a view to Georgia, Georgia and their attitude towards Russia and the EU, there is no split in the society. They have been wanting to integrate into Europe for decades, a very large majority, and Russia is seen as the largest risk and danger for the country. And these protests from very different layers of the society shows that this pro-European attitude is strong in the population and that they need and deserve our support. Thank you. I'm going to speak English now in order to facilitate the discussion.
For the 20 minutes of the Q&A. So we have many, many questions. I also have many questions, but I first want to thank you both for that. I think that this half an hour helped a lot to understand the situation much better. I want to start with what you said last, Sonia, and Margit in the Q&A is asking that question as well. So what role did Russia play in the election fraud? And I want to extend this for both of you, actually, that we speak a bit more about the role of Russia and also maybe compare, if you can, the situation with Romania in a way, because Romania was a situation where there was a very, very strong disinformation and, you know, social media attack against the election where a president was nearly elected on behalf, we must say nowadays, actually on Russia. And there the judiciary then canceled the election and there has to be a new election. So maybe how you compare this, is there still the possibility that something like that happens, or is the judiciary in Georgia completely on the line with Georgian Dream and the oligarch? So maybe a bit about, you know, what is the influence on Russia here, especially on the information space, and is there still something that can be done against it? Maybe Tiona, if you want to go first, and then Sonia.
Sure. Thank you for mentioning it. Actually, today is a very interesting anniversary, so to speak. Exactly 10 years ago, the Georgian Dream basically started its governance by crimes against cultural heritage, and then it went on with the other directions. Exactly 10 years ago, on December 13th, RMG Gold, which is an offshore company, mining company, which has very strong relations with Russia, if you look at the different investigative pieces, they basically exploded the world's arguably, probably the first, one of the oldest gold mines, which dates back to 3rd, possibly 4th century BC. And the interesting, what happened is that they were able to do so with the illegal actions of the Georgian Dream Party, because we also have a very extensive research about that, about how that happened. And this was a site of importance, not just for Georgia. There were researchers, international archaeologists from all over the world, 10 different countries, including from Switzerland, from Germany, from Belgium, that were involved in this research. And they were all saying that only 4% of this Saffarissi Khacharyani was researched, and the remaining was basically unknown what we would be able to find there. And the president of the German Archaeological Society, I think that's the name, he said 10 years ago that this Saffarissi Khacharyani ancient mine has importance not just for Georgia, but for the entire world. And the Georgian Dream, because of the financial gain, and has just very simply went through a series of basically unconstitutional acts that allowed to destroy effectively the oldest mines for the world, not just for the Georgia. And this was basically when the world should have understood what the Georgian Dream's governance would be like. And every year since then, they basically followed with different actions that have escalated to what we have today. And so when you're mentioning about the Russian influence in Georgian politics, the trace is very strong in terms of legal and political governance, but also in the disinformation scene as well. Because if you compare the narratives that you look at how the Russian government has been basically justifying their illegitimate actions since 2012, when this Russian law was adopted, if you compare how this law was justified in 2012, and if you compare the narratives and the speeches of the Georgian Dream rulers, it feels like a copy-paste. It feels like basically all the very same textbook activities that happened then and that how it happens now. Because the even if you look at the structure of the law, the justification, the individual provisions of the law, it feels basically like a copy and paste of the law that is increasingly very strongly undemocratic and damages the civil society. Apart from the political and legal copy-pasting of the textbook instructions of how they are dealing with the free civil society, we also have very powerful disinformation campaign against the EU. Because basically, people who have been through so much war and through so much struggle, basically, the disinformation campaign is trying to convince the Georgian population that the Europe wants to drag Georgia into the war, and that European and Euro-Atlantic integration would mean that Russia would be forced to reinvade Georgia. That is the narrative that is very powerful among the disinformation campaigns, that the source of funding that leads to us basically to the Georgian Dream and then possibly to the other actors as well. The disinformation is also very powerful against the LGBTQI groups, against the gender equality, all of the values basically is being completely turned around, and people are being told that, well, Europe is forcing us to adopt gay marriage, or you know, the other ridiculous narratives that are swirling around basically. And this is all very difficult, because before the elections, we have seen that a year before the elections or so approximately, the Georgian Dream slowly started to remove gender equality policies from its strategies. Basically, it has also revoked the gender quota, which have also damaged two things. They have damaged women's participation in the politics, but it also has damaged political parties, because there is huge asymmetry of the political funding. Georgian Dream has enormous privilege when it comes to comparison of the political funding. So for smaller political parties, the funding that came with those gender quotas was a substantive opportunity, possibility to have some capabilities of their own in this process. And so this disinformation campaign is largely harmful for the entire process, definitely. But then again, I'd like to stress once again that even though with this disinformation campaign, absolute majority of the Georgians are saying that we want Euro-Atlantic integration. And let me also repeat once again that in Georgia, again, over 100 years ago, we had first democratically elected Muslim female member of the local self-government. And then again, swirling the disinformation that gender equality is something that someone is forcing us externally is indeed something quite ridiculous just to tell to a country with lots of history that promoted the equality, not just for women and men, but also extraordinary stories from the LGBTQ communities that we had throughout our history as well.
Thank you, Tina. Sonia, do you want to comment on that?
I largely agree with Teyona. I would just maybe highlight once more that in the Georgian case, I can compare maybe better to Moldova because I know a little bit more about the country actually than about Romania, but there haven't been, first of all, a big difference is that in Moldova, we have a pro-European government and not pro-Russian government in power. So the government in Moldova has an interest in exposing Russian influence and Russian disinformation, which the Georgian government doesn't. So this is also a reason why I believe in the last couple of years, there has been very little proof or very few hard facts coming out, because the Georgian government does not have any interest in exposing such type of influence. But we do know that that under the Georgian Dream, far-right and pro-Russian actors have flourished, and most of them have connections to Russia. They have been traveling to Russia. They have met Russian officials. They have advocated for Russian narratives, as Teyona has said. So this gay Europa narrative, trying to discredit the European Union, traditional values discourse, lately also this sovereign discourse, which Russia started as sovereign democracy, this whole narrative on foreign agents. The interesting thing is that the Georgian dream has basically, in the end, even though some of these actors were closely connected to the Georgian dream, has in the end marginalized almost all of them. And there are discussions that they did so because they do not tolerate any independent or any attempts at independent power in the country, even when it comes from the right. So basically, they themselves took over all these right-wing and pro-Russian narratives and pursue this policy now themselves. And we know also from investigations that from journalistic investigations that there has been some Russian funding, for example, Russian investigation revealed that Russian officials funded the election campaign of the Georgian party Alliance of Patriots a couple of years ago, but this party was also marginalized basically by the Georgian dream taking over all these pro-Russian narratives. And unfortunately, the judiciary cannot be counted upon, because indeed there are very few independent voices in the judiciary, and the Georgian president had already filed a complaint about the elections with the constitutional court, which was rejected. We have no hope that the constitutional court will actually decide in a pro-democratic and pro-European way, as it would be in line with the constitution.
Thank you. So good that you mentioned the president. So Zurabishvili, the de facto president at the moment, but today there's also a special day because there's now a second president voted on by the parliament for the first time. It used to be by the people, and now it was by the parliament. So Teyona, can you? There's also many questions about this actually, and from the audience. So Helga, for example, asked, "What do you think will happen when the current president is not going and accepting the new president, and generally, you know, what do you make of the new today elected president?" And final question on that kind of, you know, the president's question is also, which I found very interesting, from Mona. She asked, how united is your position at the moment? Has something changed since the beginning of the mass scale protest? And then comes the very interesting bit to the former question, is there some sort of rally around President Zurabishvili at the moment? So what's her role? What's the role of the kind of new president that's been elected today?
Unfortunately, I believe that the question about the new president is the new president is highly irrelevant to the current situation, because I think everybody has understanding that he does not have any political weight on his own. He's basically the puppet just appointed by the GD. It's one of the people that have been considered to be, well, extremely easily manipulable. Basically, he doesn't have his own political weight whatsoever, basically. When it comes to the opposition, I'd like to reframe the sort of the conversation a little bit to the fact that these elections have not been about political preferences or political tastes, because here we are talking about the rule of law, we are talking about democracy, and we're talking about human rights. We're talking about very basic and fundamental things that the Georgian dream has violated, and the Georgian dream basically violated constitutional principles that Georgia has. The Article 78 that says that we want the EU integration, and also with its own violence and with the massive fraud. So it's not about the political preferences at all. I think that it's about preserving the democratic values that for Georgians have been associated with the European Union. So this is why I believe that, as Sonia has rightly mentioned, this has much wider implications for the EU as well, I think, because again, in Georgia today, we're not struggling for which party is going to be recognized or not. We're struggling for preservation of very fundamental values in Georgia, which has been basically an island of hope for many of the neighboring countries who often found a refuge in Georgia from political persecution in their own countries. And today we're losing Georgia as one of those islands of democracy and freedom and fairness that used to be there. And so this is why I think it's has much wider implications for the EU, the idea of the EU and Europe, rather than just an issue of the political taste. And I would like to recall and cite something that this young people said in the largest rally, the largest protest that we had. He went to microphone and in front of hundreds and thousands of people, he said something that expresses sort of the nature and the character of this protest. And I quote, he said, "We want freedom, we want fairness, we want equality. And this is why we want European Union, and we are willing to work very hard for it." That was his quote. And I think the fact that hundreds of thousands of people are risking their lives and are risking the torture and inhuman treatment, and thousands of public servants that are doing the same, I think it proves that today we're struggling for very fundamental democratic principles and human rights. It's not an issue of a political taste.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Maybe Sonia, can you say a few words and also, you know, how you see it, what the role of Zurabishvili will be in the future now? Is she becoming the figurehead in a way?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think what is interesting is that Zurabishvili has really worked very hard to gain trust from the wider population, because for a long time she was perceived as, and she was, when she was initially elected, elected on the ticket and with the support of the Georgian Dream. It was difficult for her in the beginning to gain the trust of the wider population of those not supportive of the Georgian Dream. But it turned out that she is very independent-minded and she is very democratic and pro-European. So the Georgian Dream chose someone who did not, like almost everyone else, one has to say, tolerate and support its anti-democratic and anti-European course, but someone who actually fought for Europe. And she did that very hard, and she traveled to Europe multiple times, to the EU, with her own money, because the government didn't approve her trips, and she was even brought to the constitutional court for that, and impeached, which didn't work. So she's still there. But you rightly said that today the Georgian Dream installed a new president. But Zurabishvili said that she wants to remain in power. She will remain in power from her perspective until new elections, and then consequently a new election, democratic election of the and indirect election. The presidential elections are indirect of a new president. I think this is a role that Zurabishvili never sought. She is not someone who was looking for a new career as a prime minister or with a new party. She took that role, I think, relatively unwillingly, because she saw that she gained this trust from the population, and she got this role to save the country's democracy and pro-European orientation. And I think she's still quite cautious, not to appear too much as the leader of the protest movement. So today she went to parliament, I think twice, in the morning and in the evening, showed solidarity with the protesters and gave a short speech. But she really doesn't kind of put herself in the spotlight too much. And I think that's a good decision. And also the opposition parties, they are even less present. And I think that is also a good decision, because as Tiona said, this is not about preferences for specific parties. This is really about democracy, human rights, and democratic elections. And possibly, if the opposition played a stronger role, this would definitely be instrumentalized by the Georgian Dream. So it is better to keep it as a civic movement for now, I think.
Very interesting aspect. Yeah, and I think this is also a bit from what I was reading and hearing from you, this was also kind of the difference between, you know, the demonstrations now and the demonstrations that happened after the election, which were very much, you know, also organized and formed by the opposition parties that faded relatively quickly, and now they're like the continuous 2 weeks now of demonstration is very much people driven. And I think this is, yeah, as you said, it's a very important sign. So, I mean, there are many more questions and we answered quite a lot of them, but we have to come to a close. So I want to ask you both for closing the our top question by John Gaskell. He asked, what can citizens across Europe do to support democracy in Georgia? And I think a very important question. I want to give the first word to Sonia, so Tiona has the last word. I think that's fitting. So Sonia, what concretely can people like that are in this room now in this webinar and will watch it later? And I would just want to say we will put all the things we talked about, also about election fraud and all the things. We're going to collect all the links and send it to you so you can read it yourself, also reports, because we obviously don't have time to go into like all the details in an hour, but we send you all the information next week, so you're up to date and you know everything you need to know. So Sonia, what can people here do?
Yeah, very briefly, I think two things. The first thing is to show your solidarity, to show that you are watching, to show that you care. It really means a lot because, Georgia is a bit, you know, distant geographically, and sometimes it feels like many Europeans still don't know the country very well and don't really understand what is happening. So I think showing your interest, showing that you care. There were also letters, for example, signed by artists, international artists and cultural workers. These kind of initiatives, I think they really mean a lot, also to the protesters in Georgia. And secondly, if you have some spare money, there are several fundraisers self-organized in Georgia to support fines for the detained, to support medical treatments, to support media buying, independent media buying equipment for the protest. Some of the equipment was destroyed. So if you have some spare money, I would recommend to donate to those organizations or individuals collecting money for such good causes. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia and Tiona.
Thank you for this question. First of all, I'd like to say that indeed, in Georgia, the protest is peaceful and it's entirely within the legal framework, basically. And we are doing everything we can within this peaceful and the legal means to be able to defend our democratic institutions and principles, but we cannot do this on our own. Definitely, the GD has a very strong apparatus of the law enforcement that are basically involved in this torture and the massive arrests and persecution against free media and the civil society. So from this perspective, we are trying to advocate for powerful and quick and effective individualized sanctions, because we, despite on how long and whatever we do, we cannot do this on our own, definitely. So this is very important. The second aspect is, of course, to raise awareness throughout the world about what's happening. Because if you look at the financing that the Russian government is pouring throughout the world to spread the disinformation narratives and all of that, it's extraordinary. And the voice of the simple common Georgian citizens does not get out as much in our own words, and we would really like the help to make sure that the world knows about truly what is going on. So please do support and share information from the independent media organizations. And I will start by my colleagues. You know, there's Publika, there's ONGI, there's Netgazeti, there are IFACT, which is an investigative organization, and Sonia has mentioned about the avoidance of the sanctions, and they have brilliant investigative pieces about that. Maisi News, we have our own media organization where we try to bring the most important information to the light in English language also. So please share the information, make the world know about what's going on, condemn the violence and condemn the oppression against free media and the peaceful protesters. I think that would be really important. And thank you, Sonia, for also mentioning about the fundraisers. There are lots of decentralized citizen organized fundraisers that help people get medical attention, those who were directly affected during the dispersal, violent dispersal of the rallies. There have been numerous people who were illegally dismissed also in this process. And if you look at the country of 3.5 million, at least 1 million people can be through directly traceable statistics are dependent on the ruling party because they are either socially vulnerable and depend on the social support from the government, or they are public servants or work for other kind of budgetary organizations, which is basically one third of the population. So definitely we need fundraisers for those who are illegally dismissed or otherwise harmed during the peaceful process. We need support for the, of course, the independent media as well. There are different citizen organized fundraisers who all are doing a great job. We also were requested from one of the groups to help with the fundraisers. So we provided our own account for that as well. So you are really free to address us for those kinds of questions. And lastly, I want to end this by what we're doing. We are collecting and documenting information about the illegal actions that are being going on. And we're happy to provide legal assessments, the statistics, the evaluations of what's going on to anyone interested to share this information and make the voices heard, and we can help with connecting you to the different fundraisers, obviously, and whatever we can to maintain the possibility and the chance of a democratic future. And I would like to end my conversation again by huge thank you to everyone who has been talking about the sanctions and the support to Georgia. That means the world to us. Yes, then again, in the words of the politician Zhvania, who was assassinated decades ago, I'm Georgian, therefore I'm European. And I think that our membership in the EU would mean that you would get one more ally who would really work hard and do everything we can to make sure that the rule of law and the human rights and the democracy that has been associated and has become synonymous with the Europe and the European Union to protect those values at all costs, because I believe that, again, this is a zero-sum game. This is the most valuable and the precious thing that we can do today. So I think this is all our common goal. So thank you very much for this opportunity once again.
Thank you very much. Kurz ins Deutsche. Wir werden, wie gesagt, alle Links auch
just
noch mal rumschicken.
So alle we are going to send all the links to everyone, the information, the fundraising links for you to support that. And we're going to continue to look at this issue, maybe another webinar next year when you have more time for further topics. I know that there's another event next week from the Heinrich Böll Foundation. So there's a lot to do, a lot to learn, and we want to contribute to that. Thank you to Diona, to Sonia, to our audience tonight, Saturday night, in December before Christmas. That was a really important signal. Everything will be online for your information, and Europe Calling will now go into a Christmas break. We'll be back next year to look at this issue, but also Romania with the social media campaign there, what happened there. So that is one very important topic. How can we defend our democracy, maintain it? So we're going to continue to work for that. Thank you for your support and for being here. Have a very good evening. And to Georgia, be careful, look after yourselves, and I hope you'll make it through. We're here to help you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.